like even the drug screens, like I struggled. Like, you know, it's a positive and then it'd be like, oh, well, I had poppy seeds. And I'm like, is this, do we believe this? Like, what are we going to do? And then in instances, I've had it where they actually, it was not their fault. They were completely sober and they did have a whole bag of everything bagel pretzels and it did pop because I then went and had an everything bag of and I then it popped for me. And so, yeah, it's just like those types of things, learning how to handle those situations.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most...
God, thank you for bringing us together this evening. Thank you for keeping those of us in recovery sober just another day. Please guide our thoughts, our words, our actions this evening and in everything that we do, and help us to bring love and light into the world. Amen. All right, we have a very exciting guest tonight, Candace Whitaker, the Executive Director of GAR. Before we do that, welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. All right, welcome Candace Whitaker, the International Woman of Mystery. We were joking the other day that I feel like we could literally just do a show on your story, your life, your background. There's lots of cool stuff that we want to get into tonight, though, with GAR and everything y'all got going on. Yeah. But before we dive into that, give us a little bit of background about your experience living in so many different countries and how you came to be in Georgia.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm originally from South Africa. I've just had a wonderful opportunity to travel all over the different places. My father always knew we were going to move to America. And we just didn't kind of know where to go. And in the 90s, Oprah did a show on the 10 best places to live in the U.S. And number two was Virginia Beach, Virginia. So my dad said, if it's the second best for Oprah, it's the best for us. And so we ended up in Virginia and different opportunities and through different jobs and, my marriage and everything. My ex-husband was in the military, so I became a personal trainer and ended up training soldiers and got to travel with that. Got to go to South Korea, lived in Germany for a little bit, and volunteered at an elephant sanctuary, which was super, super fun. And then ended up in Georgia. My dad, his job brought him here, and so he was here, and I had no place to go. So I was like, hey, can I come live in your basement for a little bit until I find a job? Pretty much how I ended up here, and it's been an exciting ride.
How did that whole thing with the elephant sanctuary in Thailand happen?
So I've always been obsessed with elephants, and when I was in high school, I was doing my research paper on elephant sanctuaries and stumbled upon this woman who was in Thailand, and she had was working on opening up her own elephant sanctuary. And there, you know, it's very like taboo, like women are not doing these types of jobs. Mm. And so they have something called a mahout, which is the elephant's like handler, and their jobs are just to walk around with the elephants and let the elephants do what they do and just keep them safe, because a lot of them are disabled. They've gotten limbs missing from mining and everything like that. And so she was actually getting death threats because they wanted her to shut down her place. And I just was obsessed with her. And so when I was in South Korea, we had to get out real quick because everything was getting a little sketchy there with North Korea.
Yeah.
And so I had this opportunity to go to Thailand. And I was like, well, this is, you know, the opportunity. And I was able to go there and volunteer. And it was super fun. I got to, feed them, which is amazing and extremely dangerous, it was so much fun. And got to meet them with the blind elephants and just got to watch them and how they interact. And just the main thing with them is like the trauma that they've experienced shows, and there were still the place where we were at, there was a river in the center, and on the other side there were still elephants that were being used for tourism, so they had chains around them. And the ones that were in the sanctuary, when they saw those elephants come, they would run to the other side of the sanctuary because of that trauma would come up for them. And so it was just amazing to watch. So yeah, I mean, I shoveled a lot of elephant dung, so it wasn't completely glamorous, but yeah, so it was an amazing opportunity. So
that's super cool. You ever done anything like that?
No, but now I have a sudden urge to go to Thailand. And it's funny because I never thought of, like, you know, a creature so big being disabled. Mm-hmm. But that's, like, could be very real. I can imagine, like, the experience of working with them. That must have been so humbling.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. I still have this hat that I wear all the time, and I won't wash it because I was helping this elephant that was blind because it was a street beggar, and the vibrations from the cars and the headlights made it go blind and lose a lot of its senses. And so you have to be really careful around it. And I got a little too close, and her ear hit my hat and got a bunch of mud on it. And so now, like, it's a staple, and I will not wash it because I was like,
So brought a little piece of Thailand back with you.
I did. Yeah. Thank goodness customs let me do it. So. Yeah.
No kidding. All right. So we've established that you've lived in more countries than I have states. So that's pretty cool. You made your way over to America. You've made your way down to Georgia. How did you get started in working in recovery communities and recovery centers and stuff?
Yeah, this was definitely a higher power moment for sure. So my dad happened to be driving down the road, and he saw this sign for recovery residents, and it had a butterfly on it. For some reason, he just was like, I don't know, but so there's something about this place. At the time, I'd known about treatment centers and had, you know, I understood kind of what was happening there, but really didn't fully understand what was happening in recovery residences. And so I called them and I said, hey, you know, I'm just kind of interested. This is kind of my background. And they were like, yeah, sure, come on down. And I came down, and then they were like, all right, you're hired. Like, you start today. And I was like, okay. And then I just got thrown in, and I loved it. The women there were absolutely amazing. I learned so much. And it was just an absolute amazing opportunity. And so it's Hope Homes, and Beth Sanders was the owner, and she helped start GAR. And so it was so wonderful to learn so much from her. And I was definitely grateful for the people I met. It was such an amazing experience, and also terrifying in the same sense, because, you know, it's like the Wild West. There's no, like, complete guidebook on every situation that you run into. Right. So it was very interesting. So.
Yeah, there really isn't. There's some things that you can train people on to work in recovery residences and treatment centers, but there's some things that you just got to go through.
Yeah.
And you got to experience.
Yes.
It is wild.
And they happen at 3 a.m. when your boss is like sluggishly picking up the phone and you're like, where do I go?
Yeah. Or a full moon.
Yeah. Oh, the full moon thing. Yes.
Every time. Craziest situations.
Yes.
You look up, you got a full moon.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Yeah. But what was your background that led you to, like, the treatment center was like, yeah, we want you.
So I have a degree in health and human services management. And so what I really wanted to do was to be a social worker and to help children with special needs. I have two brothers that have Down syndrome, and it was really important to me. And then I had to go do the coursework, and I sat down in a class, and they started to talk about the abuse that kind of happens in that situation. And I went straight to my counselor's office and said, look, like, if I sit across from somebody and that situation has occurred, I don't know if I can really handle that because of the connection with my brothers. It was just too personal for me. And so I said, we've got to change my major. And then at the time I'd moved to Germany and couldn't get any internship hours to become a therapist or anything. So I decided, you know, let's just go ahead and do health and services management, which I thought was an absolute useless degree. And I actually use it now. So, So yeah. And had that opportunity and just went for it. And it was a great fit. Shockingly, like, it was a great, great fit. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. You sat down in a what? In a class?
In a class? Yeah.
So for all of our listeners, my first experience with Candace was, and Candace is the executive director at GAR. I don't remember if I mentioned that, but I'm going to mention that again.
Thank you.
You were speaking at a summit, And you were talking for quite a while. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean,
no,
just,
I
you
do
were
talk
talking
for a while.
You had a lot of things to say, right?
Yes.
I'm sitting there listening, and it's perfectly, everything's just, and then all of a sudden there's one word, and it was like poth or something like that. And I was like, where did that come from? Like, what is that? Mm-hmm. So I love speaking with you. I love listening to you talk. And sometimes I'm reminded that you are from South Africa. Yes. And your accent comes out.
Yes. The Long Island comes out as well, too.
Yeah.
That's funny. You're like, sometimes I'm reminded you're not from here.
Or maybe I need to get out more.
I think that's more correct. Yeah. You just said she's lived in more countries than
states.
You have. Yeah. So we need to fix that. Yeah.
I'm going to try.
Look, my passport's ready to go.
Like, mine's not.
Oh, let's fix that.
Yeah. I need to. Okay. So what about your personal connection to addiction and recovery?
Oh, that's a great question. So I have family members and friends that have struggled with addiction. And for me, I realize that my own personal connection is I have a lot of trauma in my background. Had a little bit of the evil stepmother and that type of stuff, and grew up with some pretty not so great situations. And as I kind of came through and started working at the recovery residence and doing all of this and was introduced to the 12 steps, I realized like everybody should do the 12 steps. They should teach the 12 steps in schools. Like we would benefit so much, because it is about the core of everything is working on yourself and taking a look at everything that's going on. And it doesn't really matter. And for me, what it was that trauma aspect. I had a lot of codependency. I had a lot of that I was really, really struggling with. And I really struggled at first to grasp that, which is interesting because, like, we always talk about stigma outside of the recovery world, but we don't talk about the stigma within the recovery world, right? If you go to, like, an HA meeting versus, you know, some NA meetings, or that, it's a little bit different. And I think that I really, really struggled to embrace that at first, to just come out and say, like, yes, my recovery is what it is for me. And it was working on that trauma and learning how to talk about that and be comfortable with that, especially in today's world. Like, things are changing. How many places in Georgia are now opening up that are primary mental health places, you know? And so it's been I'm grateful. I have a sponsor. She's fantastic. We do the steps, we work on all that, and I'm grateful that I had that opportunity, because it saved my life in a sense. Like, it really did. I had multiple attempts and everything, and it gave me the opportunity to take a look back, work on that, because it's different than therapy. There are things that you work on in therapy and do all of that, but like the steps provide something completely different from it. And so for me, getting to do that, and it was really important for me that I was working with these residents and saying, like, you've got to do the steps, you've got to do the steps. But I need to be willing to do what I'm asking others to do. And that was a big part of that. So, you know, it's opened up so many doors for me, and I've met some fantastic people. I mean, and I'm so grateful for that. And that is kind of what led me down this space, is that I just constantly saw all of these people that are so vulnerable, and they were getting taken advantage of. And that really, really broke my heart. And I also wanted to help be a part of shaping the guidebook of, like, hey, what do you do in these instances, and how do you get trained to handle that? And that's kind of where everything came from with that. So, Yeah.
That's really cool to hear a non-addict, a non-alcoholic talk about the 12 steps in the sense of, oh, everyone could benefit from this. Because that's something that many of us who have needed to work the 12 steps preach, you know, just, you know, like I've heard people even coin the term GNPs. It's like got no programs. Mm. So it's like when you're dealing with people who are unfamiliar with the steps and are unfamiliar with looking at themselves, you know, like I make jokes at my job where I'm like, we should just post the 12 steps up here. Yes. And like, I called one of my coworkers, actually my boss, I called my boss out recently and being like, you're stuck in a resentment. you know, and it's like, you know, like that added gratitude of, you know, being in a situation where I have been exposed to the 12 steps, because it is helpful beyond addiction. Like, it stopped treating my desire to drink and use years ago. Now it treats my desire to be correct all the time. you know, it's like, wait a minute, where's that coming from? Because it's just beneficial in so many areas of life. So I appreciate you shedding light on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I wanted to throw an amen once or twice in there, you know, when you were talking. Like, You know, and that doesn't, you know, I hope it doesn't come from a place of arrogance either, because I'm a person that works the steps, not because I want to, but because I have to. Mm. But I've also seen the benefit of that and what that's done for me in my life. And yeah, when I got sober, I didn't realize that I had to take that deep a look at myself.
Yeah.
But then you walk around, you get all these tools, and it's like, man, if only people could see themselves the way this program allows us to see.
Absolutely.
To see ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that started you on a path. You developed a lot of empathy, a lot of compassion. I can tell when you speak about it. I can tell when you're just, I mean, it really exudes through you to a position in GAR. So how did that come about?
Like I said, I'd been working for Beth, and I went to a GAR event, and there happened to be a speaker there that talked about, you know, we need to work better together in the sandbox. We need to play together better in the sandbox. And it's just like talking about like the competitiveness between different programs and how that was coming about. And he said, there are enough addicts to go around. Mm. And like, as heartbreaking as that is to hear, it is the truth. And so it's important that, you know, seeing what GAR does and having that opportunity was just something about it just lit a piece of my heart. And I was like, I want to be a part of this. Like, the people that are coming to this are wanting to do better, wanting to be better, wanting to be transparent. That was really important to me. And so I showed up to a meeting, and they were like, hey, we just need somebody to take notes. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do that. I like to sit in the background and take some notes, sure. And then I was secretary. So, you know, it kind of fell in my lap. And like I said, I met some of my absolute best friends within the organization. And then I got a call one day, and, you know, the offer was placed on the table, like, do you want to do this? And I really, really... I struggled with it because I was like, I'm not good enough. There's no way. Are you kidding me? Like, those are huge shoes to fill. And I just really didn't know what that was going to look like. And I thought, you know what? Like, this organization is important to me. And I'm going to do my absolute best. And hopefully it's good enough, because I really, really, really want to see change in this field. Mm. So, yeah.
And I'm not sure we've mentioned, we've said GAR. I'm not sure we've mentioned what the acronym stands for.
Yes, we haven't. So yeah, it's the Georgia Association of Recovery Residences. So it's underneath the National Association. And I like to brag about this because we were actually started before. We were one of the first in the country that was started. And then the people that helped start GAR went on to start NAR. So we're kind of like the OG here. So
I was really hoping when you said national, I was like, our NAR.
Yeah.
So, and the other states have kind of taken on that those acronyms too, right? There's GAR,
there's R, there's FAR, there's OCAR, there's all, yeah, they're all acronyms there. Sometimes I get so confused, and then like I have to remember all the 50 states too, and that's a struggle too. So.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow.
What's the primary function of GAR?
Oh, that's a great question. That has changed in a sense. There are multiple primary functions. I will say the main one is that it is to help provide oversight for programs to ensure that they are running ethically and that they have safe spaces for people to come and seek recovery. Also, in that same breath, it's to provide training for all of those instances. You know, like, you can sit here and you can say, oh, I'm going to come out and, you know, inspect you and take a look under the hood type of thing. But you also need to provide training for ever-changing things that are happening. So, you know, excitingly enough, we've just moved from a 501c6 to a 501c3, which, you know, seems like a really tiny thing, but it is actually a huge deal because we've operated on like a $0 budget. So for an opportunity for us to possibly get funding, what that could do is absolutely amazing. You know, we just hired a second person on part-time, and that changed so much for us. I mean, it's a tiny thing, but it was a massive, massive addition for us. And I hope to see a lot of things change in the future as well, because I truly believe that we have a lot of work ahead of us.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I know like a lot of what y'all do is provide certifications for recovery residents of sober livings in the state. When I was at Second Chance and Safety Net, what y'all did for us was come out, make sure we got our policies and procedures intact, make sure the apartments and the homes were safe, make sure they've got exit signs, fire extinguishers, Narcans, emergency kits. We've got our MAT policies, our relapse discharge policies, and all those things. Is mm-hmm. there anything that I'm missing? What else goes into that certification process? Oof, for
there's
our
a whole
residents?
List you're missing. But, yeah, I mean, the PMP is my favorite. I will say this, that, like, it is interesting. In this field, we have a lot of people that are doers and not a lot of but doers and is in, like, let's jump in and, like, let's dive in head first and let's open up a place and let's go. And they don't take time to take a step back and build the framework. Your policies and procedures is the heart of your program. It should not go sit on a dusty shelf for 2 years until I come back and take a look at it.
In a binder in a filing
exactly.
cabinet?
Exactly. No. We should be able to look at your PNP and see how your program is operating. It is the guidebook to everything. And it's really important to update that because, you know, back in the day, it was something like SPICE that we were talking about, right? And now we're talking about Kratom. So it's ever changing. It's important to adjust those things to it. We're mm-hmm. taking, you know, we're taking heavier mental health residents, we're taking on different kind of medications or not taking on, or what does MAT look like, and being really specific about that. So yeah, I mean, there's liability insurance that's really important for you to have because, you know, there are things that'll, you know, unfortunately, accidents happen. That's what insurance is there for.
Sure.
But having those types of things is really important. Having, you know, something as simple as a good neighbor policy, right? Bring back to that stigma, right? We're surrounded, and when people see recovery residents show up, it's, oh, not in my neighborhood. And having a guide to help our residents understand and our staff understand, how should we be operating in a neighborhood? Like, what does that look like? We can't be running around outside after a certain hour, you know, because it causes some problems, right? And so having those kinds of policies in place is extremely important. Yeah.
And so are these, like, policies, are they something that are created at the state level? Were they created at the national level? And, like, most states follow the same, like, guides, you know, from whatever there are is down.
Yeah. So NAR has some guidance when it comes to that. And GAR has certainly pulled, Georgia's a very special state. And so it's a good and bad thing. And so we will help you create those policies, but they need to be specific to your program. Not one policy is going to be passed out to every single place and it works, right? And I do see that. We'll open up a book and I'll see the first couple of sentences and I'm like, I know where you got this. Policy and procedure. And it's just not checking the box off. It's paying attention to why am I utilizing this and what is it for? It's specific to your program. We will help build a framework with you together, but there are things that are going to be a bit different. Are you in apartments? Are you in a house? Are you in a place where you're secluded in the woods with 20 acres? That would be the dream. But, you know, there are different kind of places. And where are you? Are you in the middle of Metro Atlanta or are you out in the suburbs? What that changes based on, you know, all different things. And then especially like what type of residents are you taking? Are you taking low or no income? Are you taking LGBTQ? What does that look like? Is it faith-based? There has to be different guides for different things. And I don't want to create a cookie cutter recovery residences all over Georgia. I want you, if you own and operate a recovery residence, I want you to do the best possible job that you can do specifically for the recovery residents that you know you will do well at. And also in that same breath, it needs to be an ethical place. And some people don't even realize that they're doing something unethical and they're just thinking, well, it's safe. I'm doing it for the resident, you know, mm-hmm. I'm keeping their money because then they won't go use it on drugs, mm-hmm. not realizing that you're enabling and that's a different thing. And it's illegal to be holding onto a resident's
sure.
funds. Right.
Yeah.
And so having those conversations and informing people, you know, in the state of Georgia, currently there is no oversight for recovery residences. We are working on changing that. And I know Jeff talked about this a little bit as well. You know, and we mentioned like this morning I went and got my hair done and the woman who cut my hair has a license to do that. And there is more licensing over that than there is running a recovery residence, which is crazy to me. Like, you are helping people save their lives. And for you to not have any oversight and we have to go to the Capitol and ask for this, it just blows my mind. But it is so important. And I will say that we have worked really, really hard to make that change, and it's coming. I know that we've said it before, it's coming, but now, like, it is definitely, like, I think by next year, something will be put in place, and it's going to look a heck of a lot different, and I don't know what my inbox is going to look like, so if you've got a place and you've been thinking about getting GAR certified, now's the time to do it, because, like, it is really important to have that and go through and have that. You know, I see some other sites that states that have gone through that, and it has made such a big difference. Florida, for example, a massive difference. But guess what? A lot of those people that were in Florida have moved up to Georgia. And we hear the same names around and around. And we're all talking. We're all having conversations. We're having a conversation with Alabama. We're having a conversation with North Carolina, South Carolina. And we just want to make sure that we are making places that are safe for people to find recovery and their families can trust. And that's really important.
Yeah, no, it's very important. And the stigma against recovery residents as sober livings is very real. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely want to talk about this mandate and this legislation that y'all are working on in the state. I think it's important for a lot of reasons. Like you talked about, there's a lot of very well-intentioned people and a lot of good-hearted people that open up recovery residences. No licenses, no certifications, nothing like that. Some of them go really, really well. Some of them don't go very well, right? But that stigma is due to a lot of the ones that don't go well.
Yes.
You know, when I was at Safety Net, we opened up a house in Roswell in Brookfield Country Club because that was seemed like a brilliant idea for us at the time. Let's pop open sober living in a country club. And we had four women in there, and within 48 hours, we had one of the neighbors call.
Yeah.
And we had the city come knocking on our door. What are y'all doing? Blah, 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 blah. I heard you running a treatment center in there. And it's like, oh, my God. I have no idea what's actually happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And we picked, you know, it was four women who'd been in the program for a while, super quiet, and weren't doing anything wrong. I mean, it was just one of those things that a nosy neighbor said, I just don't like your kind.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of that comes from misunderstanding about what we do. And a lot of that comes from people like this woman I'm aware of down in a town in middle Georgia who's running a program in a double wide smoking crack, right? So what y'all are working on right now, I want you to talk about it more than I do, is trying to push something through the state that's going to require GAR certification for an opening of a recovery residence. Is that correct?
And can you explain on that? So the way that it works is politics. Unfortunately, not my forte. But what I have learned is that what will happen is that it will be given to a specific entity of the government. So DBHCD will most likely be. And then they contract out help to say, like, hey, can you come and do this so-and-so? And so we want that to be GAR, right? We've been doing this for 36 years in Georgia. We are the subject matter experts on this. And goodness forbid, we don't want anybody else to kind of come in and swoop in with their, you know, rules and regulations that don't apply to what we're doing and actually cause a lot more harm and then make it impossible for good places to be open. I mean, that's the big thing, is that we want to protect the good places that are open and just make sure that they continue to do that. And then they don't have to worry about neighbors calling and all these other things happening. I mean, there's multitude of different facets to this. So, but that is the overall goal, is that for us to sit down and say, hey, like, look, we've been doing this. And right now, as of this morning, I checked my computer, we have 104 GAR certified recovery residences in the state of Georgia. That's over 3,000 beds of people that are able to go to somewhere and know that they're going to be safe, and their families know that they're going to be safe as well. And so that's kind of everything that we've been working on. We've been pushing and pushing and pushing. And we've luckily had this opportunity now to grasp a lot of what this looks like, especially when it comes to the political side of things, and kind of go in from there and understand, like, this is how we're going to explain things. And, you know, it's unfortunate, for the longest time, we always would sit there and say, like, well, I just guess we got to wait for a senator's kid to have an unfortunate situation in a bad place, and then maybe we'll get some type of oversight.
Right.
And so, honestly, now it's just about going in and educating the difference between treatment centers, recovery residences, like all of those levels, there's a massive difference. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the importance of standardizing this kind of, like, recovery housing and what you're doing? What is the significance of this? What are y'all trying to achieve specifically?
What I would like to see happen is, my overall goal is that anybody looking for a recovery residence, no matter who you are, what your background is, what your beliefs are, you will find a safe place to seek recovery in the state of Georgia. And that GAR will be a resource to help link you up with whatever that place is. And that there is a framework and guideline of, hey, these are the ways that we think that this should be done. Like something is something like MAT, right? It's a very tricky situation to be handling something like Suboxone in a recovery residence when you have your tech or your counselor or whatever that's like, God, how much time sober?
Right.
And what does that look like? How to handle meds? I mean, a lot of the time, like, we don't even have a basic understanding of, like, what is the best practices of handling meds? Or also, like, learning what somebody else is doing that has worked really well and helping provide that information. So, actually, on Tuesday, we're going to be doing a safety summit, which is a training on specific safety within the recovery residence field, right? Because it's a bit different. You know, it's important that people understand how to do CPR, how to do utilize Narcan. Like, it's important to have those conversations and making sure that the basic safety of the resident is always a priority, and you're not just like fishing to find out, like, what am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed, you know, there's like something is different, something as simple as like a fire extinguisher. The fire extinguisher, that the red one is not going to put out a grease fire. Like, that's something you might need to know. Maybe I need to get the other one that sits in there too. So overall, it's just providing basic guidelines so that you can do a really good job of having a solid recovery residence. And you have a guide and a resource that you can reach out to and say, hey, I need help with this. Hey, I need help with that. And so that's the overall goal, is just making sure that we can do that and weed out the bad actors. I mean, that's it. At the end of the day, like, I get calls all the time where someone's at a place and it's a horrible experience and they're terrified, they're state mandated, they can't say anything. It's either this or prison. They don't know what to do. And there's nothing we can do. There's nothing. Like, we don't have any way. You know, we can try our best and say, you know, you can call law enforcement, maybe, but sometimes then it's not even an option. And so I think that is the biggest thing too, is like, yes, it's time that we are able to, like, we all know there are bad places, right? I mean, you mentioned one in the Double White Trail. We all talk about it. It's so fascinating that in this industry, like, we know the bad stuff's going on. Like, to me, this industry is like, it's gossip central, right? And sure. So we all hear these bad things and we're just like, another day at work, let's continue on. Yeah. Because there's no way for us to make the change happen. And so that's why it's really important that we have an opportunity to say, like, oh, something bad is happening, let's take care of it, and we have the ability to do so.
Yeah.
No, I like the emphasis you put on the safety, especially when it comes to medications, you know, because there is the medication-assisted treatment, and then there is also, you know, so many people, especially in early recovery, are on so many medications to help them navigate into feeling things again.
Yeah.
You know, so I know so many people who've been on medications, and when you're in a sober living, you know, you don't have possession of your medications necessarily, and I know someone who was given somebody else's meds by the tech at their sober living. Mm. And it was one of those things where I was like, I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, like, what do you do? And like, thankfully, like, you know, she was taken to the ER. She was feeling a little funky, but like everything was fine, you know, and they just like, just waited just to make sure no adverse side effects would happen. But like, as from what I can remember, there wasn't like a full scale investigation or anything done. It was just kind of like, that was bad.
Yeah.
Shouldn't do that. Yeah. You know, yeah. Double check the name before you give it to a resident.
Exactly.
It's like, well, like, obviously, you know, but in the event that that does happen, what is the proper response? What is the protocol to follow? And like, because that is like, thankfully nothing went sideways, but that could have very, very well have gone very badly.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like they got lucky. But I think, you know, partnering together. So what it sounds like GAR is trying to partner with these residences. So it's like, so yes, so the good ones can stay around, but it's not, you know, like, oh, we're not trying to, you know, change exactly how you do everything. Yeah. We're not trying to, you know, make you like what you said about the cookie cutter, you know, facilities, because that doesn't work. Like you mentioned faith-based, you mentioned, you know, LGBTQ, you mentioned like whatever you're looking for, you know, it's like that, those procedures need to be in place. Those plans need to be in place, and it needs to make sense for each individual program, you know, and the same thing with the safety measures. So I think that's like, that's a good thing to implement. And I love that you mentioned that you getting your hair cut and everything, because there's even like things that they are taught that I think, you know, sober livings and places like that need to know too, especially like when it comes to, being in contact with blood, like in cosmetology school, you learn what to do, standard precaution. And when you're dealing with addicts, you might need to know what to do when there's blood.
Yeah.
I feel like you might come across that a little bit more than a...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Or what happens when somebody ODs, you know? Like, not everybody knows how to use Narcan.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's very quick and easy 30-second to 2-minute clips, trainings that you can easily find online that'll kind of show you how to do that.
Yeah, and actually we've partnered with Georgia Overdose Prevention, and every single month we provide a free virtual training, and they will be at our safety summit. They'll be handing out Narcan, and you know, they'll also come out and teach your residents. Like, they will totally, they're happy to do that. They will come out, that's a great point. And I think, like, if we're talking big dreams of, like, for me personally, I would love for us to have an overdose response unit that would be a list of certified therapists in the state of Georgia, that if you had an overdose happen at your community, we would then give them a call and say, hey, you know, we'll cover the cost. Can you go out, run a process group with the community, run a process group with the staff, and be there just for continued support? And like, we'll help cover the cost. So that is one thing that I like have been thinking about for a very long time, and I would love to see happen, because like, what do you do? I know some owners that have been through it so much between their friends and families and everything. They're like, oh, just another number, you know? And like, for them, that's just the way that they have to cope with it. But they have an entire community that's now like, what do we do? Like, I don't, you know? And so I think it's just important, and to bring someone licensed, like, it's all about staying in our lane. And that's the thing with recovery residences. It's really hard to stay in your lane, because you sometimes don't know what that looks like. And so bringing in a licensed professional to run that process group, I think, would be really amazing. So that's something that I'm like hoping, fingers crossed, that we can have happen. But that would be really important, and I think really beneficial, because it's traumatizing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially, you know, the likelihood of walking in and your roommate's dead.
Yes.
Like, that's a little higher than just an everyday situation.
Exactly.
So, you know, and I've worked at places, unfortunately, where there was like active shooting situations happening. And so they brought in a therapist, and they're like, guys, like, this person's licensed, let's talk about what happened, you know? And then what you said about with, you know, how some people have to cope with it, be like, oh, that's just another day for them. It's just another day at the office. And it's like, it sounds so detached. It sounds so abrasive, but like, that sometimes you have to could be so completely detached from it. You know, I've had my own experiences of talking to someone outside of this world. That sounded weird. Outside of the recovery. I'm not on Earth. Yeah. Regret to inform you. I'm astral projecting. outside of the recovery world. You know, who doesn't understand, like, they hear about relapse and they're like, oh my God, like, how can I help? Like, blah, blah, blah. And like, I just look at them and I sound like an asshole when I'm talking, and I'm just like, they're not, like, I can't do anything for them.
Yeah.
Like, they either want this or they don't, because I've tried to help like that particular person time and time again, and it's like, I'm out, I'm tapped out. Somebody else can tap in, but I can't.
Yeah.
And you know, and the people will look at me like, oh my God, like, how could you say that? And I'm like, unfortunately for me to keep my recovery intact, this is how I have to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so for some people, you know, a lot of people in recovery do work in sober livings and places like that.
Yeah.
And so to keep their recovery intact, it's like, well, that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very different to go from being in a recovery residence to then working at a recovery residence. Like, it is a massive thing that you have to learn and understand. Like, and everything's, you know, when you're there, you know, everything's okay. You're told what to do, how to do it, when to do it, like everything, you know, you're finding your recovery, you go get your sponsor, you go do everything that you need to do. When you're running things, it's a whole different ball game, you know, because now you're seeing all this stuff that's happening in the background, the conversations that are happening, the struggles you're going through, the parents are calling, like, it's just so much. And that's why it's so important to have that training. So we have been, and this is like, you know, this is top news story. I guess you guys are hearing it here first. We have been working on an RRP certification, which is a recovery residence professional certification. This is going to be a multi-day training. Well, you will come out and we will help you go through and train you on everything specifically to recovery residents. We'll teach you how to, you know, read drug screens. We'll teach you how to do proper searches. We'll teach you what the PNP means when you're reading it. We'll teach you how to do actual like med counts and what that should look like. And so there's just, we're just seeing like a hole in that. And you could send your tech from your, you know, treatment centers. You can send your brand new, anybody that can get that training and not just be completely tossed in the fire and have no idea what's going on. Yep. But like, there are things, you know, we're getting different, you know, like I said, we're getting different drugs and things and, you know, trying to navigate that, what that looks like. And so we want to stay on top of that and understand what that looks like. So we're working on that and we'll be getting that out. We're super excited and, you know, really going to keep it at as low as the cost of possible. If we can provide it for free, that would be absolutely amazing. So utilizing that opportunity to provide some actual proper training in this space and what that looks like. And then you receive a certification, which then you can utilize so that if you are going to a different recovery residence or looking for a job, you have this certification.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. Because you and I talked about it the other day, is that there's not enough training for BHTs at any level in treatment or recovery, sober livings, whatever it is, to be able to handle everything that we have to handle on a day-to-day basis. I was very fortunate. I started in this field at Blue Ridge under Todd Stumbo. Mm. He did a lot of training with us on crisis and de-escalation, stuff like that. But everything else is just, it's trial by fire.
Yeah.
You know, and especially in a sober living, and people don't really know how to handle stuff. I would send, when I was at InterVoyage in Woodstock, I would send our techs to Blue Ridge to do the training with Todd so that they knew how to handle situations, because clients are going to have... You know, we're dealing with people who are at the lowest moments of their life, the most vulnerable moment of their life. Mm-hmm. They're struggling with their mental health. They're obviously struggling with their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, everything that they're going through when they first get sober. And you're in a very important position in their life and in their journey and what they're dealing with to be able to be the person who can kind of handle those situations. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, I don't even think anybody taught me actually how to do a proper search or a proper drug screen or anything like that. It's just like, good luck.
It's like, you've been on the other side before, so now do it.
Exactly,
Knowledge can only go so far, and it does help. It does help.
Yeah. Or what you're looking for when you're doing searches. Like, not everybody's done all the DOCs. So, like, you know, it's just like, I don't know what I'm looking for off the time. So, yeah, understanding, like, oh, what this is what it looks like. This is, you know, and going through, like, even the drug screens. Like, I struggle. Like, you know, it's a positive, and then it'd be like, oh, well, I had poppy seeds. And I'm like, is this, do we believe this? Like, what are we going to do? And then in instances, I've had it where they actually, it was not their fault. They were completely sober and they did have a whole bag of everything bagel pretzels and it did pop, because I then went and had an everything bag of and I then it popped for me. And so, yeah, it's just like those types of things, learning how to handle those situations, learning like pink Orsi. So, you know, what am I thinking of? The motivational interviewing. There we go. All of those different things are just really big skills that we need. And it makes your job way easier. When you actually understand how to correctly do crisis de-escalation, it can make your job so much easier, especially when it's 2 a.m. and you have no idea what to do, where to go. I've sat at Ridge View for hours and hours and hours. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we've had multiple, situations that we just learned because somebody else went through it. You know, I remember we had one counselor that took someone, they were taking them somewhere to the hospital or to Ridge View or something. And the person just jumped out of their car, just opened the door and just rolled out. And it was like, oh, now I put my child lock on. Like, you don't even think about something. Like that, just those little things. Or I learned very quickly, okay, when I go to Ridgeview, it's not just an in and out. So I brought a backpack with snacks, an extra external charger, coloring books, like everything that I could think of, because I'm going to be there for a while. And so helping those type and passing along that information that we've all kind of gathered here and there to be able to bring along to others so that they're not just thrown into the, and then it just gives people a better frame. The recovery changes, the quality of the recovery changes, because you are now have the skills in order to run a safer. It's just like recovery, right? It's just like 12 steps. You have the skills now and your recovery and quality changes from just being dry and just trying to figure it out versus being equipped with the right tools to move forward. Yeah. So.
And has there been pushback within the community for these certifications and like the standardization you guys are working toward? Because I know there's like a lot of people who like take pride in the trial by fire, and it's like, that's, you know, I had to pay my dues, and if I had to do it this way, so do you. Like, I was fine. And it's like, are you though?
I mean, I will say, yes, there is. The biggest thing, and let's like, I'm just the type of person who's just going to say it like it is. I think the biggest fear is the financial fear. Like, we're going to come in and audit the place. Like, that's not what that looks like. You know, that's not the conversations that we're having. But it's, and I think that even with the caliber of like the higher, the more mental health we're seeing and all of that, the owner operators are also like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't even myself, I've been doing this for so many years and I have no idea. Like, this person is laying in bed all day and all night and I do not know how to get them out of bed to go take a shower and do all of this. Like, I don't know. And then trying to find a psychiatrist to have a conversation about, hey, they're on these meds and I don't know, you know. A lot of psychiatry appointments, you're going in and you're out in 15 minutes. And so making sure that the recovery residence owners are equipped with like, okay, this is a proper ROI. This is what this looks like to make sure you know, CYA, make sure you're good. And you now then can report what you need to report and you've done your due diligence and you have your paperwork. And, you know, especially, you know, nowadays, unfortunately, there's been some instances where a lot of recovery residence owners have been sued. And so what we want to make sure is that you understand what a proper incident report looks like. And it's not just like a, I got there and this happened and that was it. It's like, who was involved? What time did it happen? What time did you call 911? How long was the call? Like, it's so much more in depth because later when you're standing in front of a judge or in a situation, you have the proper tools to make sure like, hey, I did my part. I was safe and I was trained on how to do this and this is what it looked like and all of that information. So there hasn't been that many. I will say the pushback has been more from places that are not certified or just have this like view of that I think that has changed drastically in the past few years. So
yeah, and I wanted to kind of do you remember the name and number of the bill that's getting pushed through?
I don't. Jeff Breedlove would know what it is. I think it's
where you at, Jeff?
I know, right?
Jeff, get on down here.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but the way that it worked, and it might have changed or something or whatever, but yeah, it's they're working on the verbiage and how things would run and what that would look like, and I think they're going to be moving that forward once we can all sit down together. So we're coming together and sitting at the table to have the conversation. So it was like SB 441, I think, but maybe don't take me off of that. But so that's kind of what we push through, and I'll make sure that we have it on our website so everybody can see it because yeah. I can't completely remember.
So just to play devil's advocate,
okay,
just a little bit, and to provide you the opportunity to kind of answer something that some people might bring up. There's some people that I know that are in this way of life, in the field, in recovery, whatever it is, that might have a little bit of fear around regulation. Mm. Right? We're like, so what is this going to do? Is this going to create barriers for people that are wanting to open up treatment centers or recovery residences that might otherwise not be able to? Just to play a little bit of devil's advocate.
Sure. Look, there are already barriers. Look, there's code enforcement barriers. There's, you know, zoning, all of that type of stuff. And so I think what this does is it removes some of those barriers in a certain way that makes it possible for places to open up. So yes and no. Barriers isn't the right word. Are you going to have to do some work? Absolutely. And so, but I think that you'll be surprised at how much support we're going to provide. Like I said, like I'm willing to have a Zoom call or, you know, a phone call or whatever it is and sit down with you and say, all right, like, let's do this together. Now, I work for GAR. I don't work for you. So we got to keep that in mind. So there is some work that you have to do. I just want to make that clear.
You're not going
to
do it for everybody,
yeah,
but you'll do
exactly.
It with them.
My president would be very mad if he knew that I was.
Well, it's like a good sponsor. Like, look, I'll walk shoulder to shoulder
exactly.
with you, but I'm not writing your inventory.
Exactly.
For you.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it'll be guiding through and taking a look at like, okay, how can we get through this together? Like, I do have somebody that called out to me the other day and they're having an issue with zoning because they are the property is like this close to being a full acre and they can't register under a certain zoning code unless it's a full acre. And so it's like, what in the world? What are we talking? What? And so having Gar be able to come and show up and say, okay, look, let's explain to you what's happening, because the people in the zoning office have no idea.
Right.
They have no clue.
They don't even know how to classify you in the first place.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And that's another conversation, is we need to sit down and be very clear about what this looks like, or create our own classification, you yes. know, like, and be able to go through and help with that. So I think that the trivial barriers will be removed, and we will help support you in the way that'll be needed. Are you going to be able to run a place that is subpar? I would like to say no. And also, it just, again, elevates what needs to happen within the recovery residence field. I think, like, you know, and there are different levels too, right? There's four different NAR levels. So you don't have to have everything that, you know, a level four has, right? They have a licensed professional. They have different things. They're drug screening all the time. There's, you know, or then you step down, there's more peer-to-peer. Like, there's different levels where you will fit into, and we'll just figure out what works best. And, hey, look, maybe if you just change this one thing, you can move up a level and judges will mandate to you. Like, you never know. So I think that the resources provided will make more of a difference than, you know, barriers that will be put in place.
Yeah. I'm glad that you had the space to be able to communicate that, because people do kind of freak out. Oh, my God, it's going to be a slippery slope. And it's just, you know, it's going to start here, and then there's going to be more regulation. And my response is to tell people, like, this is a way for GAR to get more involved, to have your back. Mm-hmm. And as a previous owner of a recovery resident, I can tell you that is all we ever really wanted, was to be able to have an organization with people like you and people like Cody and everything that you guys are doing to help us out, to have our back when we got the city attorney threatening to kick us out, or saying, oh, well, we needed 3,500 feet between the previous, and yours is 3,502 feet and a half or something. And it's just like,
yeah.
We need more support, and this is a good way for y'all to give us support.
And, well, and that's support from us. Like, I love that you said that. You yeah. mentioned it's like it's support for us
yeah.
versus, like I said, you could have somebody else come in that, you know, has no idea what this looks right. like. And so which one do you want? Yes. One's coming, so you get to choose which one. And so I think that I'm biased, but I feel like yeah. there's a better way to go,
That's
know?
The key piece to it. This is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Do we want GAR to be the organization, or do we want somebody else? Mm-hmm. And frankly, I want GAR to be able to
do this. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You mentioned the other day, you said something that on the national level, Georgia is referred to as a sleeping giant. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, I went to a conference and they were like shocked that Georgia was there. And I was like, what do you mean? And so, man, like, the recovery in Georgia is big for sure. I mean, like I said, I went and got my haircut this morning, and she knew Todd Stumbo's wife. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. I was like, what? Yeah. Like, this is a small world, like yep. crazy. So, like, everybody knows someone that is, you know, struggling with addiction or in recovery. I feel like more and more, especially now that you see everything floating around, like, sobriety is a bigger thing that's being accepted. And so I see, you know, celebrities and everybody talking about these different things. And so, like, we have really, really, really big players within this state, and we have a massive amount of people that want to seek recovery. And unfortunately, I just don't think we've used our voice in the best way, because we've been so terrified of, like, what's going to happen and who's going to look under the hood and what is going to go from here. And so I think that getting our kind of ducks in a row, just like, you know, with GAR, we had to do that before we applied for our 501c3 status, right? We had to change our bylaws. We had to get our ducks in a row, make sure we're good before the state comes and takes a look under our hood. And so getting all of that in place for us to go up there and you know, say these things and make the changes, I think is the big part of it. So I think it's time. Like, Florida got so much attention for all the bad stuff that happened, and they made massive changes, and they got acclimates and everything for that when it happened. And now it's like, oh, Florida, it's not like that anymore. They really, and for Georgia, we need to speak now before we get into the place of like it being, you know, really known for. I mean, we're already known for the, you know, the heroin triangle.
Right,
like
right.
That was like the one place that I saw on the show was like down the street from my parents' mm-hmm. house, and yep. I was like, oh my gosh. And so it's important now that we utilize that and move it in a different direction to kind of, you know, expose what the recovery looks like here and how things are, and that, you know, we have really, really strong recovery and it's good, solid recovery. Like that's what we need to be known for.
Yes.
And I think we're a big state. We're a big contender.
Yeah.
And so it's really important that we start stepping up and having those conversations. And I think a lot of different organizations have done well in that instance. And in the same breath, we can do better. We can show up better. There are things that we can do, each of us, better in order to kind of make that more well-known in this state.
Absolutely.
And you had mentioned at the start of the show that Georgia is a special state for multiple reasons. And so what are a couple of those reasons?
Politically, just because the way that we stand politically, we're also in the Bible Belt. And that is a big part of that too, right? And I think that's some of the fear too, is like, you know, we constantly have all the different conversations about cultural competency, and that ranges from one side to the other side. And that's why I think it's important to say that no matter who is seeking recovery, that they have the opportunity, no matter what their background is, and having that conversation and being open about it. It's a hard conversation to have, right? But I just want to make sure that, you know, we are sitting there and discussing like, hey, can you actually do this? Like, are you actually capable of handling this? Because it's either going to be a detriment to first of all, the potential resident or your community or your organization. And so just being really, really mindful of what that looks like. But yeah, being in the South, having the, you know, kind of the good old boys, and then, the Bible Belt. And then on the other hand, we have Metro Atlanta. Like, it's just this massive melting pot, which is fascinating and amazing and wonderful, and also comes with its own challenges, because mm-hmm. we have to be able to handle both, right? One day I'm going to a place that's in Metro Atlanta that's, taking mostly, lower, no income residents. And then the next day I'm driving 3 hours outside to rural Georgia, where they are like completely contained. Not a lot is around, and that looks different. They look completely different. And so it's important of like understanding what that looks like, because it ranges all around the state. It's crazy, but it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of enthusiasm in Georgia for recovery.
There is.
And I'd love for us to use our voice
yes.
even more.
Yeah.
I'm being told through the ether that the bill is SB 331.
Thank you. Yes. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So if anybody wants to look it up, please see for yourself what it is. You can look it up, research it, find out what Candace and Gar are so passionate about and what they're doing right now. As we wrap up and come to a close here, a couple of questions.
Mm.
One, how can individuals, families, and professionals use Gar to find housing right now?
Our website is great. I'm working on making it better. I'm trying my best. I'm IT. I'm executive director. I'm all the things. Janitor. Everything you want. We have now put up we have a list. There is a list that you can go on there, and it'll just give you a list of everybody. Also now, there is a searchable feature. So if you go to our website, which is thegarr, GARR network.org, you can go in and see certified programs. You can click on that, and then you can filter it. So what city are you looking at? Are you looking male, female, low or no income, whatever that is? And so we're adding more and more filters to that to make sure that people will find, hey, this will work for me. This is what I'm looking for, and going from there. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Any final thoughts this evening?
Just grateful. Thank you so much, you guys. This was really fun. I enjoyed it. I hope to be back and with bigger and better news of what's going on. And I just want everybody to see that, like, you know, I think Gar's gotten kind of a bad rap, but, you know, for a long time. And I've heard so many people when I first got on the board were like, well, what's the value? And so, you know, I was like, okay, like, and I want to hear that feedback. I want to know what is the fears, and like, let's sit down and have a conversation. I'm always open to a conversation. And I want to understand what it is, that where the fear comes from and what that looks like, and, how we can do this together. I'm partnering is a great, what you said before, cause I want to partner to make sure that we're all working together to just help people that are vulnerable and need help, and stop hearing so many stories about all the bad stuff that's happening. And also, it would be helpful if we could get some stories about some of those bad situations. You know, if anybody wants to be anonymous or anything like that, that's totally fine. But we are looking for some stories so that we can present them to the Capitol, and say, hey, look, this is what's going on. It's not just because we said, but here's actually some proof that's happening. So we would like to hear about what are some bad experiences that are going in uncertified places, because it's important for us to start exposing that and shed light on that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate where I'm just thinking like, oh yeah, so everyone listening tonight, because it's like everyone who's been to sober living has a bad sober living story.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's all you hear. Even if you're a client in treatment, it's just like, oh my god, well, I don't want to go to that sober.
that's why I didn't go to sober living. I was like, those places sound terrible. Right. Yeah. Like, no thanks. Like, I had to work an inventory on them. I'm like, I'm afraid of them.
Yeah. Sounds like they're just cooking meth and shooting dope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just not the case at all.
No.
That's not the case at all. So we're glad to have you on. We appreciate you coming out. We want to say a special thank you to all of our donors, all of our supporters, to Jason, Caleb, Bailey on the ones and twos back there producing the show. Thank you so much to the Georgia Opioid Abatement Trust for supporting Most High Media. Thank you to GAR for everything that you do. You guys are not some regulatory board coming in to drop the hammer. You guys want to help, you want to support, and I wanted to make sure we got that message across this evening. So thank you so much for coming aboard. This is the Most High Show.
You did great.
Yeah, thank you.
You did so good.
It was